Hello. Over the next 4 nights, I will talk about the poetry of William Blake. I have chosen different works through the artist's life, starting with the Songs of Innocence, tomorrow the Songs of Experience, on Wednesday I will consider America, and on Thursday Blake's later writing, including Vala or the Four Zoas. The Songs of Innocence are among Blake's best work. They have this very deliberate naivety and simplicity, formed with short lines where everything is controlled and seemingly effortless. Inherent in Songs of Innocence is the idea of a primordial innocence, of which Blake's great symbol is Albion, England really before the Norman yoke, before the imposition of a class system. So he's harking back to an early, more innocent and pleasurable life. Blake begins the Songs of Innocence with a poem actually called Introduction. Piping down the valleys wild, piping songs of pleasant glee, on a cloud I saw a child, and he laughing said to me, pipe a song about a lamb, so I piped with merry cheer, piper, pipe that song again, so I piped, he wept to hear. Drop thy pipe, thy happy pipe, sing thy songs of happy cheer, so I sung the same again, while he wept with joy to hear. Piper, sit thee down and write, in a book that all may read, so he vanished from my sight, and I plucked a hollow reed. And I made a rural pen, and I stained the water clear, and I wrote my happy songs, every child may joy to hear. Blake's early verses really are songs, and I think he's at his best when he's writing lyrics, which are very hard to write, although here they are seamless, unlike anyone else's. I think with writing a song, as W.B. Yeats says, it's something you hope will be on everyone's lips, something that's remembered and passed on, whereas poems are much more a written form or medium, and I think it's the orality of the Songs of Innocence, their spoken quality, that is so winning. The introduction is definitely a song, piping down the valleys wild. Technically, it's written in trochaic metre, where the first syllable foot is longer than the second. This is a form common to many songs. The result of this is that it's got this intent, deliberate but high-sounding lift to it. And I plucked a hollow reed, and I made a rural pen. When I write, I think, and I wrote my happy songs, not I sang my happy songs, and I understand Blake here in pointing out that there's something about writing which is against the song. It has an intensity unto itself, rather than a melodic quality which emanates out, hence the fact that the rural pen has stained the water clear. I used to think that the poems in Blake's Songs of Innocence were very deliberately naive and they didn't really anticipate the Songs of Experience, which are altogether darker. But rereading the poems, I noticed that in the introduction, he wept, the child wept with joy to hear. And then I noticed that Blake, the narrator of the poem, says, I plucked a hollow reed and I made a rural pen and I stained the water clear. So the water is stained in some way, and this sets up uncomfortable vibrations, which are, I think, present in many of the Innocence poems. Holy Thursday, later in the collection, seems to be entirely innocent. The first verse goes, 'Twas on a holy Thursday, their innocent faces clean, the children walking two and two in red and blue and green, grey-headed beetles walked before with wands as white as snow, till into the high dome of Paul's they like Thames waters flow. The poem describes the annual service of thanksgiving held at St. Paul's in the 1780s and 1790s for charity school children, where the children gave thanks for the charity they have received throughout the year. I think that Blake sees the children as innocent, but the annual thanksgiving is somehow false. It's an institution which the children must take part in. Walking in an orderly line, dressed in uniform, they participate, but it's only a show. Blake is being ironic here, attacking the hypocrisy of organised religion and the supposed virtue of charity, an ideology whose strongest accusers are the charity children. The last line, till into the high dome of Paul's they like Thames waters flow, sounds ominous, and the point is the Thames waters are controlled, just like the children here. The grey heads of the beetles, with wands as white as snow, in contrast to the colours of the children's clothes, is ghostly and slightly sinister, and I think Blake notices the wands as though they are used to beat the children. Also, Blake is working in 6-foot iambic lines, which are technically alexandrines, a verse form that was most popular in French poetry of the 17th century. Blake is speaking to a different audience here. He's making a sardonic comment to the wealthy literati who would recognise this courtly form and the awkwardness of its use in this context. In Songs of Innocence, you also get the anti-slavery poem The Little Black Boy, which has this apparently naive ending where the boy says towards the white boy, "I'll shade him from the heat till he can bear to lean in joy upon our father's knee, and then I'll stand and stroke his silver hair and be like him, and he will then love me." The poem, composed in 1788, dates from the dawn of the anti-slavery movement, just a year after William Wilberforce had founded the Society for the Abolition of the Slave Trade. Wilberforce worked with fellow libertarian Josiah Wedgwood to design a medallion of a black slave in chains on his knees with the inscription, "Am I not a man and a brother?" The medallion was circulated to wealthy households, apparently put on guest plates to prompt a discussion about slavery. Blake would have been acutely conscious that few would have seen black slaves in England or of any personal contact with slaves, but all who had owned land in the West Indies, including many members of Parliament, had benefited from slavery financially. His words point to an underlying superficiality in people's deeper concern for individual liberty. T.S. Eliot wrote of Blake that it is impossible to regard him as a naive, a wild man, a wild pet for the supercultivated. The peculiarity is seen to be the peculiarity of all great poetry, something that is found in Homer and Aeschylus and Dante and Villon. It is merely a peculiar honesty which, in a world too frightened to be honest, is terrifying. It is an honesty against which the whole world conspires because it is unpleasant. Blake's poetry has the unpleasantness of great poetry. Blake was a short man, about 5'5", muscular, broad-shouldered and well-made. He had penetrating, gleaming eyes, yellow-brown hair, curled with the utmost crispness and luxuriance, according to Frederick Tatum, his friend and biographer. His locks, instead of curling down, stood up like a curling flame. He had big, visionary eyes, which people commented on, and I think that's a Blakean description of Blake, which is partly his appeal. The image we have of Blake is one he has bequeathed to us. I think Blake found innocence an intent and intense process. It is to be completely alive to the world, energized. He said innocence is eternal delight, and I think you get that sense from the poems and songs of innocence. Little lamb, who made thee? Dost thou know who made thee? Gave thee life and bid thee feed by the stream and o'er the mead. Gave thee clothing of delight, soft as clothing, woolly bright. Gave thee such a tender voice, making all the vales rejoice. Little lamb, who made thee? Dost thou know who made thee? In writing about the innocence of childhood, Blake shares a subject with Wordsworth, 13 years younger than Blake. Blake read Wordsworth, and Wordsworth admired the Songs of Innocence, and later, in his ode, Intimation of Immortality, he sees childhood as a state of natural grace, and the entrance into the adult world equals loss and imprisonment in the artificial constraints of society. Shades of the prison house begin to close upon the growing boy, but he beholds the light, and whence it flows, he sees it in his joy. Blake was not always a poet. In fact, his only formal training was in art. At the age of 10, he entered Parr's drawing school and later studied at the Royal Academy of Arts. He became an apprentice under James Bassar, a well-known engraver, at the age of 14, and remained his apprentice for 7 years. It is impossible to think of his words isolated from imagery. The songs are engraved words and images together, designs. The images may have derived in part from Blake's visions. The first and perhaps the most famous in Peckham Rye, when he was 10 and saw bright angelic wings bespangling every bough like stars. He saw angels in the trees. Blake built up a collection of drawings. He reworked images until they became more like emblems for verse. He would combine these emblems with fitting words. The full-page illustration which accompanied Introduction as the frontispiece to the Songs of Innocence shows a piper looking up at a child resting in the cloud while sheep graze between trees. What you notice in Blake's illustration is there's a lot of flowing lines. It's very organic. There's a flying child, and there's the more statuesque figure of the rural bard with his long pipe in beautiful soft colours. Blake was determined to infuse his drawing with a feeling of spirituality, and so combined the formal training he'd had at Pars, where he would draw classical casts of ancient Roman and Greek statuary, with the freer Gothic style, which he was absorbed by in a series of plates he made for Gough's sepulchral monuments, where he studied the tombs of kings and queens in Westminster Abbey. For Blake, the Gothic was the style at the heart of ancient Britain. It had wild qualities, a natural style that came before the rational, civilising classical style of Europe. He once wrote, "Grecian art is mathematic form, Gothic is living form." His images are distinguished by the tension between the Gothic and the neoclassical. One of the extraordinary things about the designs of the poems, the images and the words, is that everything had to be done in reverse. He was drawing words backwards, and I sense he had a relationship with the words as individual forms, along with their carrying the meaning. As soon as Blake had completed Songs of Innocence, he began work on Songs of Experience, using the back of the same plates, and I can't help thinking that he would have enjoyed the way the words in Experience would have made sense on the Songs of Innocence side of the plates, had they been on glass, say, and vice versa. In fact, Blake eventually published both Innocence and Experience together in a volume called Songs of Innocence and Experience, Two Contrary States of the Human Soul, where he engraves the title for the two works on a single copper plate, somehow expressing the inevitability of experience. Blake was an avid reader and wrote and spoke several languages, Hebrew, French, Greek, Latin and Italian. Although his father was certainly involved with educating the young Blake, encouraging, even indulging him, giving him money for books and prints, Blake famously doesn't talk about his parents. One biographer says he wanted his imagination to seem self-created, which is a very Protestant idea. I think this comes from the tradition of anti-Catholicism in English visionary thought. Milton, who Blake greatly admired, is an obvious example who writes very distinctly with a Protestant imagination. Another big influence is Bunyan, a major figure for Blake. Blake himself comes out of English descent, although he was baptised in an Anglican church, St James on Piccadilly. Soon afterwards his father became a Baptist. Blake's parents were possibly of the Moravian sect, one of the earliest groups of Protestants who believed in universal education. Blake himself taught Catherine, his illiterate wife, to read. In this religious sect, there is a very strong dissenting stress on the Bible and vision, which I think Blake absorbed, and which is where the Songs of Innocence comes from. The Songs of Innocence concludes with the voice of the ancient bard. "Youth of delight, come hither, and see the opening morn. Image of truth newborn, doubt is fled, and clouds of reason, dark disputes and artful teasing. Folly is an endless maze, tangled roots perplex our ways. How many have fallen there? They stumble all night over the bones of the dead, and feel they know not what but care, and wish to lead others when they should be led." And I think this is very much more spoken, hieratic verse, perhaps not a song at all. It heralds the more serious voice of experience which Blake was working on at the time. I think this is the voice of the antiquarian Blake when he's thinking of Albion, the symbol of primordial innocence. Tomorrow I'll be looking at Songs of Experience, a collection of poems that contain some of the greatest poems ever written in the English canon, The Sick Rose, The Tiger, and London. Until then, good night.